Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at the San Diego Performance Academy. And today, my very special guests are John Valencia and Lori Corbin from the Foundation for Cuyamaca and Grossmont College. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I understand that you are working on a really exciting project for this weekend and that it's something the public can get involved with. Tell us about it, please.
Sure. This year we are taking a new spin on a fundraising endeavor. It is to support our Give the Dream program at the community colleges that allows emergency funding for students. So if they have some sort of emergency that comes up, we'll give them up to $500 grant to keep them in school.
Wonderful idea.
So in order to do that, we need to raise some money. So we've decided to take a spin on a neat idea of creating a music video.
Very exciting.
And getting the entire community involved to come out and film.
So when will the filming be done?
The filming will be on Sunday at Grossmont Center Mall, right in the middle, next to the info booth.
Yes.
From 10 o'clock in the morning till 11.
So what is the video all about?
Well, the video showcases a student going through and singing this Black Eyed Peas rendition that we've converted, and we rewrote the lyrics, and the student is going through her life and trying on different opportunities, different costumes, she's wearing a stethoscope, she's wearing a lab coat, she's wearing a construction hat, and meanwhile, the entire community is involved. Coming out of businesses and
creating all over town,
just supporting her and showing how much the community really supports education in the community.
Well, that sounds like a very exciting project. So if the public wants to get involved, they can show up at Grossmont Center at 10 o'clock this Sunday?
That's right.
Very good. Lori, tell me about some of the students that have already been helped by these grants, these Give the Dream grants, and what kind of a difference it's making in their lives.
Absolutely. I was involved with our Give the Dream fundraising campaign last year, and so I met some of the recipients of these grants, and they are just so absolutely grateful for the assistance they receive. They come to us when they're at a point in their lives when they don't know what else to do. They want to continue their education, but something has happened that's in their way. And it's usually a financial reason, and people don't like to ask for help.
Yeah, medical, car issues, those kind of things.
Right, absolutely. Even childcare, rent, utilities. It's hard to be a student if you're homeless. So they find out about our program, and they come to us, and it allows them to continue their dream because they're in college because they want to get a college education and better themselves and often better the lives of their families. So they're at a point, they can't continue, they can't get to school because their car is broken, they don't have a place to live, they can't see the computer or read their books because they need glasses. We give them this grant, takes a huge burden off their shoulders, they're able to continue their college education, continue with their dream, and eventually either get their certificate or their degree.
Well, it sounds like a marvelous program and a wonderful project with the Give the Dream video. Where can people get more information about the video and about the foundation?
They can go to givethedream.net. It's a website that we have for the foundation and has all the information, has sample videos, a little sneak peek of what we're doing, and it also showcases all the great sponsors that have helped us make this project.
Fantastic. So when and where can people come and see the finished video?
The video will be premiered on Saturday, May 10th at Grossmont College from 10:30 to 1:30.
In the theater at Grossmont College?
In the 220 building, yes.
220 building. Very good. Well, we look forward to hearing more exciting details about that soon. And thank you so much for joining us here today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you.
Thanks.
La Mesa Mayor Art Madrid held a press conference Monday to formally launch his re-election campaign. The mayor cited successes under his leadership during his 24-year tenure as mayor and his 10 years previously on the city council, as well as a decade serving on civic boards and commissions. In 1990, when I was elected mayor, my commitment then was to help make La Mesa the best community in the region in which to live and raise a family, said the mayor, adding that his leadership skills have helped fulfill that dream. I've led the transformation of La Mesa into a vibrant, proactive, and inclusive community that continues to attract new families and businesses to our city. He further pledged to vigorously protect the city's character and heritage. Councilman Mark Arapostathis recently announced his intention to challenge Madrid in the mayoral race. Noting that elections are about choices, Madrid said voters will have two distinct candidates and that those differences will be the focus of his campaign, with emphasis on the integrity, leadership, values, and courage of each candidate. The mayor said that public safety remains his top priority, including police and fire, as well as core services protecting health, safety, and welfare of residents. He then touted accomplishments on his watch. Just look around the city, he observed, citing new state-of-the-art public buildings, new infrastructure, including the $2 million renovation of Allison, redevelopment of Fletcher Parkway, and smart growth development around transit corridors. That's just the beginning, he added, noting that soon La Mesa will embark on another grand project he initiated, the $5 million Downtown Village Streetscape Revitalization Project, which he believes will attract visitors and generate new business for downtown merchants. He also took credit for launching La Mesa's retired senior volunteer patrol and the city's successful farmers market, as well as helping to direct the city's year-long centennial celebration. Recently, council members voted to curtail the mayor's travel allowance to attend events such as a national mayor's conference. Madrid fired back that those trips led to successful grants of more than $12 million. These grants have helped make La Mesa a safer, more walkable community for school-aged children, residents, and guests, he said. Increased tension between the mayor and the council in recent weeks culminated in members endorsing Arapostathis for the mayoral run. Critics have questioned what Arapostathis stands for. The mayor made clear that the public knows where he stands, based on his long list of accomplishments. He also touted his creation of 6 new city boards and commissions to provide a voice to the voiceless on key issues for residents who had previously been ignored or rejected. Key issues facing La Mesa include whether a proposed high-rise building will be approved and the future of the former police station site in the Civic Center Plaza. While some have called for sale of the latter, Madrid pledges to protect the community's character, adding that he aims to assure that the Civic Center campus and other valuable city-owned assets will be developed appropriately through public-private partnerships. Madrid has never been one to treat the mayoral position as a part-time job, pouring countless hours into the job, albeit though critics have sometimes accused him of micromanaging and proving irascible to those who oppose his policies. After 44 years of serving his community, Mayor Madrid pledges he intends to continue to devote the same time, energy, hard work, and loyalty to the city and every resident during the next 4 years that I've devoted to my community during the past 44 years. This will, however, be his last campaign, the long-serving mayor confirmed. The current fiscal challenges La Mesa faces today requires a mayor who is conversant with all aspects of the problem areas, he concluded, adding, I am that person. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
The show will go on at the Ken Cinema. Landmark Theaters had announced that it would shut down the single-screen movie theater in Kensington on April 27th due to failure to negotiate a long-term lease with the property owners, the Birken Trust. The theater is one of only about 1,000 single-screen theaters left in the U.S. and only one of 3 remaining in San Diego County. But now, after fans took to Twitter sphere and other social media to protest the theater's demise, a deal has been reached that will enable the theater, which specializes in arts films, to stay open for years to come. This weekend, a film festival planned to mark the end of the cinema will instead become a celebration to thank the theater's patrons, with showings of Seven Samurai, a midnight viewing of Monty Python and the Holy Grail, Lawrence of Arabia, and Singing in the Rain.
Landmark will upgrade the theater with a digital projection system and in turn will receive a long-term lease. The theater will close briefly for a few days during the upgrade, reopening on May 2nd, much to the delight of its audience. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Raina Menashe.
Three judicial candidates are running for an open seat on the Superior Court in District 25 on the June ballot. The top two will face off in November. The three candidates are Deputy Attorney General Brad Weinrib, Attorney Fraud Examiner Michelle Hagan, and Attorney Court Volunteer Ken Gosselin. But one of those candidates is stirring up controversy over allegations of ethics violations. Weinrib filed a legal challenge alleging that Gosselin exaggerated his experience and education on his ballot statement. On April 4th, Superior Court Judge Roland White accepted a stipulation signed by both parties and required Gosselin to correct his ballot statement. Gosselin's initial ballot statement asserted, "I have been a tough but fair volunteer judge pro tem in thousands of criminal and civil cases assigned by the San Diego County Superior Court." He also claimed to be a Harvard Law School trained mediator. Gosselin insists that he did hear thousands of civil and criminal cases and that his service is a matter of public record. He said he agreed to change his ballot statement from the word criminal to traffic in the interest of a mutually acceptable agreement with the plaintiff, not because the statement was false. "We checked those public records disclosed by the court, and they show that the cases heard by Gosselin were, in fact, limited to only traffic and small claims cases. A letter signed by Michael Roddy, executive officer for the Superior Court, states that while Gosselin has heard over 11,000 such cases as a temporary judge pro tem, quote, Mr. Gosselin has not been assigned to hear any misdemeanor or felony cases. He has heard infraction cases, however, in traffic court. Gosselin also never presided over a jury trial," Mr. Roddy added. Now, as for Gosselin's claim of being Harvard-trained, he graduated from Laverne College of Law in 1980, and he failed to pass the bar exam until 16 years later, Weinrib advised the registrar. Gosselin never attended Harvard Law School other than taking a single mediation workshop. Knowing misrepresentation would be a violation of the canon of ethics for judge candidates. Gosselin told us that the mediation class he took at Harvard is relevant to the duties of a judge. He insists that Weinrib is only trying to smear his character. He added that his Laverne Law degree, his certificates, and his credentials have appeared on his website since February. That's true. Before then, however, until Weinrib's complaints came to light, those certificates were not on the website. And now the court stipulation requires his ballot statement make clear that his only education at Harvard was a mediation class. Now, Gosselin is also drawing scrutiny for possible violations of the California Judicial Canon of Ethics because he hosted a campaign fundraiser for Congressman Daryl Issa. And he endorsed another congressional candidate running against Congresswoman Susan Davis, as well as making large donations to the Republican Party, which later endorsed Gosselin. Judicial candidates and judges are prohibited by the Canon of Ethics from endorsing or fundraising for non-judicial candidates. Gosselin's campaign committee forms, which he signed under penalty of perjury, indicate that he began accepting contributions in April 2013 and was thus a candidate subject to judicial canons of ethics. Gosselin's own Facebook page includes a photo of himself hosting a fundraiser for Congressman Issa at Gosselin's own ranch on November 16, 2013, an apparent ethical violation. Asked about the fundraiser, Gosselin told East County Magazine, "While my residence was used as the location for a political fundraising event, I did not participate in the making of any solicitation of any person to contribute funds. According to the clear language of the canon itself, my actions were not a violation of the ethical limits placed on candidates for judges." But the Commission on Judicial Performance's annual reports reveal that other judicial candidates have faced disciplinary action for very similar actions. In 1992, a judge held an open house for a candidate for a non-judicial office, and he was sent an advisory letter warning that he violated the Code of Ethics. An advisory letter was sent to another judge the same year, 1992, and found that judge gave the appearance of soliciting contributions from attorneys and their clients for the election campaign of a candidate for a non-judicial office. In addition, The California Judicial Conduct Handbook specifically prohibits a judge from personally soliciting campaign contributions for non-judicial elections. Even the appearance of making such a solicitation would be grounds for discipline, the handbook reads. Moreover, the California Judges Association Ethics Committee website reveals that back in 2004, the Judges Association advised that a judge may not attend a fundraiser for a supervisor candidate held by the judge's spouse at the judge's home. Now, all judicial candidates receive a joint letter from the Commission on Judicial Performance and the State Bar when they launch their campaigns, advising them of their responsibilities to comply with judicial canons of ethics, as well as with campaign finance regulations, and about the disciplinary proceedings they could face for violations. In addition, a new requirement this year is for all judicial candidates to complete a campaign ethics training online. Gosselin also made $2,000 in donations to the San Diego Republican Party last year before declaring his candidacy. He also made two more $400 donations, $800 in total, to the Lincoln Club, a political PAC organization, in late 2013, after his candidacy was announced. Now, judicial candidates are prohibited from donating over $1,000 total in any calendar year to political candidates, parties, and organizations, and also from making donations of over $500 to any single political entity. That's per the Code of Judicial Ethics. Judicial candidates who make legal donations before their campaign are advised to ask that those excess donations be returned. In addition, Gosselin has yet another seeming ethics lapse. Joel Marchese, a Republican running against Susan Davis for Congress, told us, "I have endorsed Ken Gosselin, and he has endorsed my campaign for the 53rd congressional race. Ken is a hardworking judge pro tem and will do a great job as judge." But since judicial candidates are prohibited from endorsing non-judicial candidates, an endorsement by Gosselin and Marchese would be yet another violation of the judicial canon of ethics. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
This is Mark Clements.
And this is Cody Clements.
Working hard to bring you the wildest jobs in East County. Today, Cody and I went to Lakeside, where this weekend, the 50th annual Lakeside Rodeo will begin. There we met a man who's going to explain why his workday is more interesting than yours, or at least more likely to end up in a trip, to the hospital. I'm here today with Kevin Higley, who is a rodeo clown. Kevin, how long have you been doing rodeo clowning?
Ooh, that's a dated question, huh? You're going to make me tell how old I am is what you're trying to get at, right? No, I've been actually a professional rodeo clown for 30 years. Prior to that, I participated in high school rodeo and as a contestant, and then I started doing what we call amateur rodeos as a rodeo clown bullfighter, and then I got my pro card and went on to the professional ranks, and so I've been it for, I bet you, total almost 35 years.
So you were doing professional rodeo as what prior to doing the clown part of it?
I was I tried to be a bull rider. Thought maybe I'd make a profession out of it and a living. Wasn't very good at that. So what it came to be was my brother was a really good bull rider, and we had what they call a practice pen at home where we buck some bulls and stuff. And so we took turns being the bullfighter who would save the bull rider. Well, boy, I saved him a whole lot more than he ever thought of saving me. And so it became apparent that I was probably a little bit more adapted to the bullfighting area and saving the cowboys. And that was really the love and passion that I had once I got started, that, you know, the thrill of saving a guy so he can get on to another one is really something else. And as time went on, of course, you slow down a couple steps. Not me, but my mind may. I don't know. But anyway, so then I transferred into the rodeo clown / barrel man type aspect of the professional rodeo deal.
Now, you use the term bull fighting, which seems more appropriate to me somehow. So here's another question for you. I've noticed that bulls don't seem to have a lot of sense of humor. So
Have you actually made one ever laugh?
Oh, yeah, they're always smiling when they run over you. Yeah, well, they've got a smile. You know, a lot of people, they used to say that a bull will actually close his eyes before he runs over you. But that's not true. I can attest to that. They're wide open, and they are laughing. It's like, I got you, buddy. It's good.
So the natural follow-up to that is, how many bones have you had broken?
That's one we don't like to discuss very much. But, you know, I've been really fortunate in my career to stay away from most of the broken bones. I fractured a couple neck vertebrae, and I've had a couple of bones in my foot broke and a couple of things like that. But as a whole, I've been really healthy and really good.
Do you really like to use the word whole when you're talking about bulls and horns and stuff like that?
Yeah, that's kind of, you got to watch that one. Put you in a hole.
Now, I'm sure that people, not necessarily associated with rodeo, but people on the outside probably think that you would do this for the thrills. What kind of satisfaction do you get from actually doing this work?
That's a great question. You know, like I said early on, is just the satisfaction that you've did something to help somebody else to be able to further their career and go on and stuff. So saving a bull rider from a bull or helping him, assisting him to be a higher score, that's where it starts. And that now it's the thrill of entertainment, you know, making people laugh. I just love to hear them giggle and laugh. And so that part is where I'm at now in my career. So we do it for the love, because, you know, unlike a lot of professional sports, the money isn't probably as good as your football, your baseball, your basketball players, but it also is an aspect of it. We do it for the money as well.
Yeah, so you're as a professional rodeo, I see that you have a big trailer, so you travel around from rodeo to rodeo?
I do. Yeah, I'll be here in California this week. Next week I'm in the state of Washington. Week after that I'm into Colorado. Throughout the course of this year, I'll probably be in at least 15 states. I guess the farthest away, which my trailer wasn't able to go with me and a lot of my animals wasn't, was Hawaii. We've did rodeos in Hawaii on two of the islands over there.
Oh, really? So you did go to Hawaii, but you just didn't float your trailer across?
No, trailer stayed home as well as my animals that I use in my clown acts, yeah.
Okay, so you do an act out on the in the arena with your own animals. I see you have a dog over there. Is that one of your?
Yeah, I've actually got three or four dogs, and I've got a trick horse, trick mule. You know, sometimes the kids become my tricks. You know, I'm very enthusiastic about getting the crowd involved, and so we use the kids a lot of times in some of the things we do.
If I ever were to find myself in a field with a pissed off bull, because, you know, that happens to me a lot, give me some ideas for how to sort of distract the guy.
Well, you know, so the best thing to do is, of course, it's not all about how fast you can outrun them. It's about the move that you can make to get around them. Because they've got a big old body and they got to bend and have to get to back to where you are. So what you want to do is you want to kind of get in as close as possible and then make that move to the inside and keep them coming. And then when you get to break, you break them so they're on a different lead and you can get away from them.
So you have to fight every instinct, natural instinct, to turn around and run. You have to get close to them, right next to them, in order to be safe.
You're sure better off. Yeah, you're better off. I mean, I know that my legs have never stood around for my face to take a beating, you know. And so it's kind of a natural instinct to run, yes. But, you know, there's a lot of different things you use. The apparel that we wear, the things we wear that gets their attention, that will bring them in your direction, and then it's up to you to make the move to bring them away from the cowboy and to get yourself away.
Okay. Now, professional football players, you mentioned them. They're always complaining about having a short career. Now, you've been doing this for a while. How long would you say the average rodeo clown sort of stays in the profession?
You know, and I guess that would be a term that's kind of tough to use, average, because I don't know any of us that are too, you know. And I guess the guy that kind of I look up to and kind of was my mentor, taught me a little bit, was a guy by the name of Wick Path. And he actually fought bulls at an active level, professional level, till he was 57 years old. It's all about how physically fit you stay. We've got a guy in the business right now that's strictly entertainment. He doesn't even get in the barrel anymore or do any of those things to help out. And he's 78 years old. and very active and doing a great job.
Okay, well, see, my son here is, let's say that he goes to see his guidance counselor at school, and the guidance counselor, I've noticed, is, doesn't have any posters on the wall of rodeos or anything.
No.
But let's say that she says that she's changed her mind and he should forget about engineering and all of that, and he should become a rodeo clown. What advice would you give him for getting into this job, apart from why don't you do something safe like join the Navy SEALs?
Yeah, there we go. Two safe jobs. Well, I'll tell you what the first thing I would do with modern-day rodeo, we have schools, and the best thing to do for someone that's inspiring to be a rodeo clown or a bullfighter or a participant, a contestant, is to search out one of those schools and go spend a week, 3 days, whatever the school is, and actually get a head start on what they really could do and if they're adapted for that.
Do you know of any women who do this job who are rodeo clowns?
You know, there used to be, years ago, there was a lady that actually didn't actually do the bullfighting part of the clown, but she got in the barrel and she would tell a few jokes and do stuff. But that was a long time ago. Right at this present time, I don't know anybody, any ladies. I think it has to do with intelligence.
Oh, okay. That's an excellent point. Cody, you have a question?
Yeah. What's the deal with the barrels? What exactly do you do with barrels?
Okay. The barrel is out there for a particular reason. We had put it out in the middle of the arena. Actually, not quite the middle of the arena. It's a little closer to the buck and shoes. And it really becomes kind of like a safe haven for the bullfighters or the bull riders. In case that bull is coming at them, they're caught out in no man's land, they can come there, catch the breath, get away, or at least the bull will be distracted so they can move on. It's my job as a barrel man to position my barrel in a place which will help assist the bullfighters and the bull rider to be able to have a little bit more safety. So, and it's really like sitting in a washing machine just waiting for somebody to turn that thing on, the spin cycle. Because when one of those guys hits it, it can really turn your world upside down.
So it sounds like your job is more about strategy than it is about, I mean, obviously on YouTube or on TV, what they like to show is rodeo clowns being tossed and trampled and all that. But the object is to avoid that and to protect the cowboys and to entertain the crowd, basically, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's a given that you're going to be in a very bad situation most of the time because, you know, you've got an unpredictable animal. He's going to do what he wants to do. He's going to do this. So you're going to be put in a position where you're going to get in there that you're probably going to get what they call hooked and thrown out of there. But the better that you prepare yourself to be able to make yourself in the right position to walk away from that, the longer your career will be.
So you're kind of like the ninjas of the West, is what you're telling me.
I never had it put that way, but yeah, cowabunga, dude, let's do it.
Okay, Cody?
So is it true about bulls that they don't like red, like don't like red capes? Is that true?
Great question. You know, and it really is a myth. It doesn't have to do with the red cape that the matadors, you see if the matadors are fighting, or like in our case, we wear bandanas a lot of times on our deals. It's all about the movement. It's the movement of something that brings their attention to it. And that's why when you see the guys with the capes and the matadors, and they can stand in one spot, but the bull will follow the cape and follow that deal.
Is there anything else you'd like to say to the people of East County?
Boy golly, if they get a chance, come to the rodeo. They're going to enjoy it.
So, Cody, now that you've seen a little bit of what life as a rodeo clown is like, are you ready to reconsider your future?
No, because as much as my counselors say that I should quit any field that involves thinking, I think I should steer clear of this kind of career.
Are you saying that you don't want to get involved in something that can cow you this much?
You know, I have a lot of beef with you saying something that mean about me, Dad.
Well, I would say that right now my attitude is the lasso your problems.
I just don't know if I'm capable of learning the ropes on this exciting career.
Well, son, that sounds like a lot of bull to me because I don't know anyone who clowns around as much as you do. This is Mark Clements.
And this is Cody Clements.
Clocking out of one of the wildest jobs in East County.
The
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
By a unanimous vote, El Cajon's City Council has voted to grant $10,000 to fund the San Diego Youth Choir, a multiracial, multi-ethnic, and multicultural community youth choir based in El Cajon. The group's mission statement is to empower young leaders through musical excellence. Its mantra is empowering San Diego County youth one note at a time. Councilman Gary Kendrick says the decision is really an investment in children's future. $10,000 today could save us $100,000 tomorrow in police costs and property crimes, he said. He added that performing together also builds self-confidence and a sense of accomplishment, as well as forging bonds that can last a lifetime. The San Diego Youth Choir aims to be housed in a central location in El Cajon with state-of-the-art rehearsal space, practice rooms, dance rooms, and a recording studio. Choral leaders will work with approximately 1,000 high school students across San Diego County. Each school group will have its own team leaders to develop leadership skills and boost graduation and advancement to college. Students practice at their own schools, as well as attending one combined rehearsal each week. The musical group features concerts at local high schools, starting this year with Lincoln, Cajon Valley, Helix, Crawford, and Grossmont Highs. Performances at other venues will range from Disneyland to a Padres game in the future, along with hopes to record an album. This will be an exciting journey for all of us, Artistic Director Jason Prater stated. A Columbia University study on music in schools found that students who participated had higher self-confidence, cooperated more with teachers, expressed themselves more fully, and had much lower rates of drug and alcohol abuse. Music has the ability to stir the soul, move the body, and bring community out of chaos, an executive summary of the choral group's proposal to El Cajon's council began. Even more, music has the ability to unite peoples, neighborhoods, communities, and cities. It is clear, the summary concluded, participation in a solid, quality music program makes the difference. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Stopping the spread of superbugs or antibiotic-resistant bacteria is the goal of new legislation introduced at the state capitol. The bill would ban non-therapeutic use of antibiotics in livestock in California, meaning the medicine couldn't be used to speed up animal growth. Assemblyman Kevin Mullen says resistance to antibiotics is an increasingly serious problem.
The use of antibiotics in animals results in reservoirs of antibiotic-resistant bacteria that then spread through the food supply and environment and can be transmitted to humans.
The U.S. Food and Drug Administration has recommended limitations on the use of antibiotics in livestock, but Mullen says this doesn't go far enough. His bill would require meat companies to provide greater transparency about their exact antibiotic use. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration has recommended limitations on the use of antibiotics in livestock, but Mullen says that doesn't go far enough. 80% of all antibiotics in the United States are sold for livestock use. The CDC says every year more than 2 million people in the U.S. contract infections that are resistant to antibiotics, and at least 23,000 people die as a result. Mullen says,
AB 1437 will help protect the effectiveness of life-saving antibiotics for human medicine and will help reduce the spread of antibiotic-resistant bacteria.
Avinash Kaur with the Natural Resources Defense Council says the bill follows the science and takes important steps to protect public health and preserve the effectiveness of essential human medicines.
We are looking at longer illnesses, more hospitalizations, the use of antibiotics with greater side effects, and even death when treatments fail.
The bill would also require meat companies to provide greater transparency about their exact uses of antibiotics. For Public News Service, I'm Lori Abbott.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week. This week's Destination East County program includes several annual outdoor festivals, a parade, garden and home tours, plant sales, wine, ranch, and dancing events, and more. The 49th Annual Lakeside Western Days Parade theme for this year is Lakeside, Where the West is Still Alive, and celebrates the Lakeside Rodeo's 50th anniversary. The event will take place on Saturday, April 26th at 9:35 a.m. along Woodside and Main Avenue. This year's parade grand marshal is the El Capitan Stadium Association for 50 years of organizing the Lakeside Rodeo. The parade will be filled with a wide variety of antique and classic cars, bands and entertainment from local schools, floats representing local businesses and organizations, clowns, and of course, cowboys and cowgirls. To get ready for the parade the night before, on Friday, April 25th, the Optimist Club of Lakeside will be offering its 33rd annual Western Days Barbecue Dinner, served at the Lakeside Rodeo Grounds from 5:30 to 8 p.m. The menu is deep pit barbecued beef with all the fixins. The annual Lakeside Rodeo will take place the same weekend as the Lakeside Parade and Western Days celebration. Performances are scheduled throughout Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, April 25th, 26th, and 27th at the Lakeside Rodeo Grounds. Spectators can enjoy Western-style fun with bronc riding, barrel racing, steer wrestling, roping competitions, and more. The Horse of the Sun Ranch on Old Highway 80 in Pine Valley is holding its open house event on Saturday, April 26th from noon to 4 p.m. The open house includes free program demonstrations throughout the afternoon, free ranch tours and nature walks, and catering by Descanso Junction Catering. In honor of Arbor Day on Saturday, April 26th at 10 a.m., guests can join Park Ranger Brett Exner to take a hike through Santa Isabel East Preserve. The group will be observing the various species of trees in the preserve, including oaks, sycamores, and pines. This is a family-friendly event with all ages and abilities welcome. Hikers can meet at the Santa Isabel East Staging Area on Farmer Road in Julian. Inclement weather will cancel this event. The German-American societies in El Cajon are celebrating the heritage of their home countries at their second annual International Heritage Ball on Saturday, April 26th from 6 p.m. to 10:30 p.m. The Heritage Ball includes the USA, Poland, Germany, and other European countries. Dinner and dessert will be served from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m., and then the German Kindertanzgruppe of the Society's Little Dancers will open the Heritage Ball at 7:30 p.m., followed by other entertainers performing their folk dances. The Lemon Grove Historical Society presents a day at the historic 1892 Troxell Manor and Gardens, Lemon Grove's third oldest home, which was built by William and Mary Ann Troxell. The tour takes place on Saturday, April 26th, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., when visitors can tour the manor and its garden, with ancient trees, a working organic garden, and orchard. Also available will be demonstrations and live music under the trees with guitarist John Garner. Guests can also observe artists at work and enjoy refreshments and tastings. The 6th Annual Coyote Music Festival will be hosted by Cuyamaca Community College on the campus Grand Lawn on Saturday, April 26th from 12 p.m. to 4 p.m. The festival features seven bands of up-and-coming local talent that will showcase all original music compositions. These homegrown singer-songwriters will perform in a variety of genres, including acoustic, rock, folk, and pop. The event is free and open to the public, with free parking. A springtime English-style high tea amidst blooming fields of lavender will be served up at the Keys Creek Lavender Farm in Valley Center. The high teas will be served at 2 p.m. on Friday and Saturday, April 25th and 26th. The 19th Annual East County Garden Tour, put on by the Friends of East County Arts, Inc., takes place on Saturday, April 26th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. All six gardens offer a variety of settings to learn from and enjoy. Included in the tour this year are water-wise settings, unique garden corners, an African-themed explosion of colorful characters and drought-tolerant plants, St. Madeline Sophie's two-acre organic garden and nursery, which sells many wonderful plants, and apple crate vendors offering crafts and garden creations for purchase. The Wine and Rail event embarks on Saturday, April 26th, at the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum in Campo and the Campo Depot, where riders can enjoy an afternoon of leisure in the beautiful backcountry riding the historic Pacific Southwest rails. Altogether, there will be live presentations by local wineries, heavy hors d'oeuvres, presentations by historians and wineries, as well as a scenic train ride, all put on by the Mountain Empire Campo Kiwanis and East County Vintners Association. A self-guided tour of the museum is also included. Now for a preview of some upcoming events, all in East County. The Wings of Freedom aircraft tour at the Ramona Airport will be holding its last day for tours and flying on Friday, April 25th from 9 a.m. to noon. The exhibit opened on Wednesday, April 23rd. Aviation enthusiasts and war history buffs can enjoy a unique display at Ramona Airport of World War II aircraft, including the B-17 Flying Fortress, B-24 Liberator, and P-51 Mustang. There are walkthrough tours as well as actual flights in a few of the vintage aircraft, including a B-17 bomber. The Ramona Bluegrass and Old West Fest is coming up on Saturday, May 3rd and Sunday, May 4th. This two-day local East County Festival has a lineup of musicians performing on the Old West stage, a Civil War era camp, a saloon, mountain men, a prairie schooner, and the cowboys. You'll be able to visit their camps, talk and learn about how life was lived in the 1700s to 1800s, and enjoy two full days of bluegrass and old-fashioned cowboy music, along with jam sessions and workshops for children. Cajon Classic Cruises returns every Wednesday. The car show will be held every Wednesday night and continues through October 29th in the area of the Prescott Promenade in downtown El Cajon. Old West gunfights, ranch branding, mutton busting, and a horseshoe tournament will take place at the Campo Lake Marina Roundup on Saturday, May 3rd, presented at the Camp Lockett Event and Equestrian Facility. Other activities include the Miss Roundup pageant, kids' games, country music, an antique tractor display, a reenactment of the famous Campo gunfight at high noon, merchandise and food vendors, a stick horse competition, and gymkhana all day. Gates open at 7 a.m. with opening ceremonies at 10 a.m. The annual Spring Garden Festival will be celebrated at Cuyamaca College on Saturday, May 3rd from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., This free family-friendly community festival will feature demonstrations on community farming topics, Cuyamaca College's nursery's biggest plant sale of the year, the Rancho San Diego Farmers Market, a fashion show called Fashion in Bloom, and much, much more. This is the 21st year of the festival, and the demonstrations aim to help one become a better gardener and learn how to conserve our precious resources. The 17th annual Sage and Songbirds Festival and Garden Tour will be held in Alpine. Two separate events, the Garden Tour will be held throughout the weekend on May 3rd through Sunday, May 4th. The Garden Tour includes five private home gardens, a public habitat garden with a plant sale, and a tour of the Sky Hunters Birds of Prey Rehabilitation Facility. Then the festival takes place one day only on Saturday, May 3rd from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., at the Alpine Creek Town Center on Tavern Road in Alpine, where free admission gives you a butterfly release, birds of prey and hummingbirds, snakes, lizards, spiders, educational seminars, and arts and craft vendors. Sir Optimus International of Lemon Grove presents their Spring Craft Fair on Saturday, May 3rd, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Lemon Grove Academy Auditorium Middle School in Lemon Grove. The fair features plenty of original and handmade gifts. For a wine experience in the country, the 24th annual Vintage Alpine is taking place on Sunday, May 4th from 1 to 4 p.m. at Summers Past Farms on Old Highway 80 in Alpine. Next year marks the century milestone of the founding of Acumba Hot Springs. Four major festivals are planned for the centennial, including the third annual Blues Festival on Saturday, May 3rd from 12 noon until 6:30 p.m. At Highland Center on Old Highway 80 in Acumba Hot Springs, guests are invited to attend the event, celebrate, and enjoy Acumba's scenic backcountry location with their lawn chair and an appetite for homemade food, crafts, and a lineup of music with a variety of talented musicians. There will be pulled pork sandwiches, hot dogs, and refreshments for sale at the center, and the Acumba Women's Club will be selling baked goods. That's all for this week. All of these events and more can be found on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at www.eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is supported by our listeners and with the Community Enhancement Grant from San Diego County. See you around, East County.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
This is Janice Russell, host of People Power, profiling people and organizations making a positive difference in our community and our world. Today, I am here with Tad Parzan, the executive director of the City Heights Partnership for Children. Your goal has been that young people emerge as adults with the skills to succeed in college or career and enter adulthood as productive members of the community, and you have done this through collective impact. How does this work, and who have you partnered up with?
Well, thanks for having me, Janice. It's nice to see you, and it's nice to be here. So we've partnered with pretty much every sector that impacts the lives of children, whether it's schools or government or law enforcement or philanthropy or nonprofit, parents themselves and even children themselves, as well as health agencies, social service agencies, and the business community. So this is all about getting all of those stakeholders in youth outcomes, getting them all aligned around the very important things, those critical milestones, and what we need to do to get kids to those milestones. And the milestones we use are readiness for kindergarten, third grade literacy, eighth grade math and language proficiency, and graduation from high school with real skills to succeed, not just a piece of paper. So we're very excited moving forward, and it's already impacting children's lives on the ground.
Very good. And how successful has this collective impact process been?
Well, again, on the ground, we're already seeing fabulous results. For example, 500 kids getting glasses free of charge on the school site, never actually having to leave school to get vision care, but get the primary exam, secondary exam, and then glasses if they need it. So those are kids, and we all know, we all remember that kid who wasn't paying attention in school and fell behind, and then we found out later, oh, it was really because he or she had a vision problem, but by the time it got discovered, it was too late. Another example would be hundreds of parents getting training in how to get your child ready for kindergarten so that when they get there, they have the beginnings of literacy skills, the beginnings of number understanding. They understand how to work in a group a little more. They're familiar with books a little bit more. And we're hearing from teachers and principals and parents that there's a crop of kindergartners coming into school this year that are way more prepared, way more engaged, and parents are more engaged.
Very good. Your website mentions that you are first focused on reaching the Hoover High School cluster, which consists of one high school, two middle schools, and 10 elementary schools. What were the needs there, and how have you worked to improve them?
So City Heights, and in particular the area where Hoover sits, is the vulnerable youth epicenter of the region. It is the most youth-dense place in all of San Diego County, and there's a lot of low-income families there, some with generational poverty, some immigrants who are struggling to make their way in America. So all of the issues that come with that kind of community, whether it's access to health or access to health care or accessing health care and having the understanding of what wellness visits are and how do you get access to that care. Vision care would be another example. Family stability would be another example. Family income stability would be another example. And then there's the educational factors that we want to support schools in a way that we've not done in the past. It really takes more than just schools to educate children. It takes a 360-degree support set in order to get a child, for example, to where you are today. That really took more than just school. That took family, that took neighborhood, that took community, that took healthcare, et cetera. So we really are trying to piece together that holistic approach to supporting every child every step of the way from cradle to college or career.
Have you since expanded to any other schools?
We're about to start in Vista. The Vista Unified School District and the City of Vista have approached us about bringing the Partnership for Children to Vista, and that will be launching probably May or June. So we're open to any community. We're open to serving in any community that wants us and is ready. We're very careful not to just go into a community and say, hey, we're here to fix anything. We're not here to fix anything. We're here to help build the civic infrastructure with you, our partners, with the community as a partner, hearing the community voice and getting the technical expertise and resources from the public and private sector, although it's important to note that we're not asking for more public money to be spent. We think we can do so much more with the public resources that are already there, just allocating more strategically aligned, and managing to outcomes so that we, as a community, can be proud that we brought our children to readiness for kindergarten and third grade literacy and so on. It's really about coming together as a community and doing the most with what we have. I mean, regardless of whether you're on the left side of the political spectrum or the right side, on the left they might call it, it takes a village to raise a child. On the right they might say that it's 1,000 points of light. Well, that those 1,000 points of light are much stronger if they're focused as a beam of light to get to particular results that we know are going to build a thriving neighborhood fabric.
Could this work in somewhere like El Cajon, where there's the highest poverty level?
Well, it could definitely work. What we're seeing all over the country, in some places that are more like El Cajon, in some places are more like City Heights, in some places are more like Vista, in some places are more like Southeast San Diego. This framework, we don't really call it a model. We call it a framework because it's really like a frame of a house that each community can build on and create the house and the infrastructure that works well for them. So it's really about understanding the needs of that specific community rather than coming in with a preconceived notion of what will work.
Your website also mentions that the City Heights residents, many of whom are immigrants or refugees, have been stepping up to serve as catalysts for positive changes in the community, and they have been working closely with a group of community-based organizations. Can you describe that in more detail for us?
Oh, I'd be happy to. In fact, you can't see it over the podcast or the radio, but the big smile on my face will tell you how excited I am about it. So, for example, when we asked kindergarten teachers what percentage of kids do they see each fall who are really prepared to succeed in kindergarten? The percentage was shockingly low. I mean, so low that it's just intolerable and unacceptable that in 21st century America that would happen anywhere, let alone right here in what we call America's finest city. So we asked what it would take to get kids to a place of deeper readiness. And clearly, that's something that has to happen before they get to school. So that's really in the preschools and in the family settings. So we got together with a number of nonprofits who work in early childhood literacy and schools, asked what they had, what we need to do. And then we engaged a group of parents that we call promotores. So these are people from the community who then receive a toolkit that the nonprofits and the families devised together that's translated in, it's in English, but it's translated in Spanish, Vietnamese, and Somali. Then the promotores or cultural brokers, if you will, or community brokers receive training in how to use those toolkits. And these are exercises and activities, everyday activities that help your kid get ready for school, whether it's a letter of the day, a color of the day, a folding exercise to show shapes and triangles and squares. Regardless of what it is, there are all kinds of things that can happen in the home at no cost that will help build readiness. So 20 parents received this training that was provided by a nonprofit. Again, this is not about new resources. This is making more of what out of what we have. So they received the training, and then they each trained 5 to 10 other families. So now you've got this pebble in the pond effect where you got the ripples going out. These 20 parents became 200 parents, becomes 400, 500, and 1,000. And eventually you get this deep and rich community-owned movement where parents are driving kindergarten readiness in a way that we've never seen before.
Oh, wow. That's really great. So what can the public do to help? And are there any volunteer opportunities available?
Well, there are always volunteer opportunities available. Schools and children all need help, and volunteerism is critical. Volunteerism comes in many forms. Some is in supporting a school through whether it's facilities help or cleanup help or receiving training so you can adequately support literacy. The days of going to school and volunteering to read to children are somewhat in the past because we really need those to be important instructional minutes. So there are a couple things that I would ask community members to do is, one, we've got to make this a movement. If we want to call ourselves in San Diego America's finest city, then we need to act like it. And we need to act like it by supporting our children from cradle to college or career, because that's what's going to build the fabric of our community and our neighborhood and our economy. You got businesses who are talking about they don't have the workforce pipeline that they need, and the economy is not robust enough. Well, if we have young people who are trained to do the jobs that are here, then businesses won't have to go elsewhere. So helping schools to devise relevance and curriculum that will lead to workforce readiness, supporting agencies that help build youth character and preparedness and support children, such as mentoring programs. One of our best partners, Reality Changers. Chris Yanoff does a wonderful job there with our wonderful other community partners like Words Alive and Community Housing Works. And I've started this list, and there are so many, I'll never name them all. But volunteering in those agencies, getting real training so that you can really make an impact rather than just showing up to help a little bit. But showing up to help is always good. I mean, there are schools that need help both in terms of cleanups, in terms of painting, communities that need cleanups, communities that need ownership. One concrete example would be like forming a walking school bus. So kids in the neighborhood know that the community is behind them getting to school. The walking school bus is a wonderful example of a community getting behind kids in a way that doesn't require special training. It just requires organization, letting kids know and letting the school know that the community, the neighborhood, the parents, the grandparents, the aunts, the uncles, are all, the businesses are all behind kids getting to school safely, getting to school prepared, and really making the most of their lives.
Is there anything else that you'd like to share about this program with the listeners?
I wish I could look each and every one of them in the eye and thank them for their support in terms of getting our children ready to be productive citizens and community members. I wish that they could see the light in those children's eyes as they start to turn the corner from not understanding that they have a real shot, that they have a real chance to succeed in San Diego or wherever they choose to go. That's really what I would love for people to see, like I see every day, is that instant light in a child's eye when they first understand, I can really be something and I'm going to.
Thank you, Tad.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
This is Janice Russell, host of People Power, profiling people and organizations making a positive difference in our community and our world. I just spoke with Tad Parson, the executive director of the City Heights Partnership for Children. You can learn more by visiting www.chpfc.org for more information.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, Brian Boykel, Kevin McLeod, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.